T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back. We'll play the song through next hour, I promise. It's a good last hour thing when you're looking at that clock. It is Beamer in for Bowerly. We're talking about the ongoing situation at Mercy Hospital and what will happen at 6 o'clock if an agreement is not done by midnight today, tonight. So before we get to that, maybe this is just me. Maybe I'm just, I like to think of myself as a nice person, but sometimes maybe I judge too much off the littlest thing. But I know many of you have been on social media, right? You've gone on Twitter, you've gone on Facebook. You ever notice people that post things that make them look like they are just an amazing parent? They're just an amazing person. They describe situations that never happen. I don't know if you're familiar with the comedian Jim Florentine, but he does a podcast twice a week, and he'll start every podcast off with stuff that didn't happen, but he doesn't call it stuff that didn't happen. And he'll read stuff from Facebook, and it's so true. Now, obviously, everyone knows that people make their lives look better on social media, right? This is the best depiction of their life. No one's gonna most people, I shouldn't say not everyone, most people aren't going to put all their problems on social media, okay? It's the best depiction of their life. But then you've got people that will post things like this, and this was posted by an employee over at Barstool. And I shouldn't share this because it's infuriating, but I'm going to share this. Now, you tell me if an 8-year-old said this. I mean, we talk about banning people, putting people in Facebook jail for posting things on Facebook. I'm sorry. If you've made up a story about your child to make the world believe that you are this amazing parent, you know, you should maybe be kicked off Facebook for 30 days. Because there is no way this happened. Again, this is from Barstool. They posted this. Today, I asked my 8-year-old son what he wants to be when he grows up. Well, Joe, good English. His answer, I want to be an ally. I was confused. Maybe he learned about the Axis and allies in school. So I asked him, you mean you want to be like a soldier? He looked at me with a pitying smile. What a silly mom I was. And said, no, mom, I want to be an ally. And then he lists off, you know, who he wants to be an ally to. He goes, I want to be an unconditional support for all disadvantaged minorities and marginalized communities that need somebody to stand by. That's what I want to be when I grow up. I was choking back tears of pride when he told me this. But I know kids can be fickle. Last year, he wanted to be an astronaut. So I asked him exactly why he wanted to be an ally. He schooled me good. I don't want to be an astronaut. How can I be so selfish to want to leave Earth when it's in such a horrible state? I don't want to be a doctor. How can I keep healing bodies when it's society that's sick? I don't want to be a lawyer. How can I strive for justice through a judicial system that's inherently racist and oppressive? No, mom. No, mom. What I want to do for a living is a whole different matter. I want to be an ally. Kids, all you can do is teach them the best you can, because before you know it, they're the ones teaching you. That never happened. Your 8-year-old kid did not say all those things. This is someone who has got way too much time on their hands, and they want you to go, oh my gosh, look at what Karen has done with her children. Look at all these things. Her 8-year-old son said that. No, he didn't. He did not say that. I mean, what drives anyone to put this lie together. I mean, obviously those points were her points, right? These are things she wanted to say. And she says it as if her 8-year-old son. Now, I'm not denying that there are some very intelligent 8-year-olds out there. But there is no way that discussion happened in the way that that woman advertised it on Facebook. And I do not understand why these people that have so much time on their hands, they always have to post things to make them look great. Right? Again, I understand on social media, the best aspect of your life. But why post something like that? You just want people to think that you're this, you know, and if you need to post something like that to make people think that you're this awesome parent, maybe you should focus more on, I don't know, parenting, right? Maybe you should focus more on that than what how people perceive you on Facebook. But that's my generation for you. Like I say, there's a lot of things that embarrass me about the millennial generation, and right there's one of them. These millennial parents posting things that clearly their kid did not say, did not do, but they need to spend more time on social media making them seem like these awesome parents than actually doing the job of a parent. But hey, if I'm wrong, get that 8-year-old kid to call in. I'd like to hear that 8-year-old kid school me. But I thought I'd share that with you. I don't get it. And it's this. You know, social media is toxic as anything, right? We've talked about this numerous times. But I don't understand this needing to lie to get people to comment. And you know what the comments were? Oh my gosh, you're so great. You've taught your son so well. I don't know. We had a caller yesterday, Tracy, I believe her name was, who said she got rid of her Facebook. And all I can say is Tracy is in a better place. Tracy is she doesn't have to worry about going on Facebook and seeing any of that. You know, again, the millennial generation, which I am a part of, you go on Facebook and you think, what the hell has happened to this generation? Or at least that's what I think. I just wanted to share that with you. Sorry if it was a waste of 10 minutes. I thought I'd share that with you. 803-0930, *930. That's the number. We are talking about the situation at Mercy Hospital for this segment. And then I have something I think is a fun segment to end the show the last 90 minutes that I think you all will enjoy. But like I said, this is happening tomorrow. This is something that goes into effect. If there is no agreement by midnight, 6 o'clock tomorrow morning, there will be a picket line. You already heard Lucky in Orchard Park say she will be in that line at 6 a.m. And you know we'll be covering it live on WBEN. But the situation that we have heard for the last 2 hours that nurses and healthcare workers have been working through. And we had one nurse call in and say, not only do they have double the patient to nurse ratio, but they're taking the trash out. They're getting food. They're doing other people's jobs because of the staff shortage. And they're also responsible for double the patients. And as the ICU nurse that we had in the first hour said, the more patients a nurse has, the worse that is for each patient. The less attention each patient gets. And when you're talking about nurse to patient ratio, the patients need the attention of the nurse, right? These are people whose care is in your hands. And through these shortages, we are talking about a double nurse to a patient to nurse ratio, and then add everything else in. And then add a lot of these nurses taking the overtime. I mean, talk about burnout. I can't even imagine. But like I said, I don't compare. I've never had a job that could come anywhere close to comparing to an important job like that, right? I've always had what I would say is an easy job. So I have nothing but respect for the people in that field that go to work every day, knowing the stress they're going to be under, knowing what they're going to be called to do, and even now knowing that they're going to have double the patients still going into work and doing their job for the care of these individuals so they can get out of the hospital as quick as possible, as healthy as possible. I have nothing but respect for them. 803-0930, star 930 is the number if you'd like to share your experience working in a local hospital, or if you have been affected by this, you know, and I think we'll start hearing these stories come out over the weekend as surgeries are suspended, as patient care is suspended. We are going to hear more and more people in the community affected by this because, like I said, you can't just say, oh, my surgery was suspended, I'm going to go somewhere else. You're having staffing issues everywhere. So if you were supposed to have a surgery tomorrow, you can't reschedule and get it done on Monday somewhere else. It's not like that. So now you're going to have to walk around with that ailment even longer. You know, something that you thought the relief was right around the corner. Now you're going to have to wait even longer if this situation goes past tomorrow. And at 4:20 on September 30th, we are less than 8 hours away from the deadline. Less than 8 hours away from the deadline. And we have no agreement. We had a press conference last hour going through the plan. If a strike happens tomorrow morning at 6, that's not a good sign that they believe something will be done at midnight. If you are coming out saying we have this in place, this, and this, yes, they ended it with our goal is for something to be done by midnight. But if you're going through this press conference, that's not a good sign. The fact it's gotten this far is not a good sign. And what I'm hearing from the callers, what I'm seeing from the texters, it doesn't look like this is going to be something easily resolved. And this is a problem that didn't just appear. It's a problem that's been going on for a while. And again, to the detriment not only of the nurses, which is very important, but to the patients, to the people that depend on that care. It is Beamer in for Bowerly here on News Radio 930 WBEN. Happy Thursday. I mean, it feels like a Tuesday for me since I just came back yesterday. Happy Thursday. Hope everyone's week is going well. Hope you have something fun planned for this weekend. Like I said, try to get as much as you can out of every day of life. You know, that's how I look at my weekends. Try to always have something planned. And let me tell you, for the next month, I have something planned every weekend. I have my buddy's wedding this weekend, and then Virginia Tech is home for 3 straight weekends. So, you know, just try to live it up. Try to get as much as you can out of life. That's what you deserve. You work a tough week. You gotta live it up. You gotta get as much as you can out of this life and have some fun. You know, live. You know, that's what I always say. You're not promised tomorrow, so live as much as you can today. And hope you are doing just that. We are talking about the situation at Mercy Hospital and hospitals around the region. As let me tell you, the last hour and a half has really opened my eyes to a situation I did not know it was as bad as what you are describing to me here on the WBEN phone lines. Let's go to Mike on a cell phone. Mike, good afternoon.
Hey, how you doing today?
Doing well, Mike. What do you got for us?
So I'm very close to a person who works at the hospital there that's in a management position. And I didn't catch all of your callers earlier, so I just got my car on the way home from work. But I'm hearing about, you know, mostly staffing issues and things of that nature. And I'm sure none of them probably mentioned about the amount of call-offs that they have there. And then when a supervisor or manager tries to call in a person to come and work, that nobody wants to come in to work because they don't want to come in to work. And so they know their schedule, and they know the days they want off, and then they get them off. They can use vacation days and things like that. And but when a person calls off, they know they're going to be short-staffed and all the other workers there. So did anyone mention about how much sick time or call-off time that they use?
Mike, this is the first time hearing of this, so let me ask you. So you already know it's going to be short-staffed. And then someone calls off because of the amount of sick time or vacation days they have or personal days. And then that just adds to your shortness, your staff shortness.
Sure it does. So that, you know, that's part of the issue there.
So you think that's something that could be addressed on the other side? You know, if they want to come to an agreement, is maybe not make it as easy for a call off.
No, that's all negotiations, right? And that's what negotiations about. Nobody. I was in a union for close to 25 years, and nobody gets exactly. That's why they call it negotiations.
Right.
Right. And you can't have you can't get everything that you want.
Mike, let me ask you, your 25 years of being in a union, were you ever this close to a picketing situation?
The particular union I was, by law, we weren't allowed to strike.
Okay. So you never were 8 hours away from having to go on the picket line?
We weren't allowed. No, it was illegal for us to strike.
Okay. All right. Well, Mike, I appreciate the phone call. Appreciate the input there. And that's another way of looking at it. You've already got a short staff situation, and now you've got someone calling in sick. And let me tell you, going back to my days of retail, which I know the job is not comparable, but what I'm trying to say here is someone calls in sick, you've got maybe a 30% chance that someone's actually going to come pick up that shift. Now, that's retail where, yes, you can do, but if you're talking about a hospital where you already have people, you already have a short staff, and now you're trying to fill someone calling in sick at last minute, it's just an overall awful situation, and I'm sure all of this is coming up at the negotiation table. And, you know, I would love to be a fly on the wall in that negotiation room. I would love to hear what is going back and forth, what has been turned down, what has been offered from both sides. You would have to think there have been a lot of coming to the table and proposing something. But at this point, we are 7.5 hours away from the deadline, and there is nothing. All we have heard today is a press conference from Catholic Health addressing the what ifs. There is a strike tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock. It'll be very interesting. And as we heard this morning, very rare in New York State for something like this to happen with healthcare workers. But again, we are 7.5 hours away. And from what I've heard, and again, the callers today haven't all been from the same hospital. We've had callers from all over the region call in and explain the situation, explain what's going on, explain the shortage, explain the burnout. Explain being overworked, not only overworked hour-wise, but during your regular shift being overworked with your patient-to-nurse ratio, having other jobs added because you don't have people to do the jobs that are supposed to make it more easy for the nurses to focus on their patients, like nurses taking the trash out while they're responsible for 8 patients. Again, this has really, and I hate to keep repeating myself, this has really opened my eyes to the situation that is going on, and it's thanks to your calls at 803-0930. Now, my plan when we come back is to go into another topic, but if you want to continue talking about this, you can shoot me a text at 803-0930, or you can get on the phone, 803-0930, and we will definitely continue talking to you about this situation as we near a strike at Mercy Hospital in just 7.5 hours.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back. Beamer in for Bowerly here on News Radio 930 WBEN. I just read something during the break, and I hate to do this because I honestly will get kicked off the air if I share what I just read. But it was so disturbing that I can't stop thinking about what I just read. I mean, it was disturbing. Like, I might want to report it disturbing. I don't know. You ever read something that just sticks with you because it is so, I mean, it was out there, but disturbing at the same time? Oh, man. Maybe I'll share it on social media. It was disturbing. Let me tell you, I am disturbed by what I just read. It is Beamer in for Bowerly. We will continue this going until 5 because this is something that is really gotten the calls in the text board going, 803-0930. Let's start with the text board. Someone says, I'm an OBGYN charge nurse in private practice. To the nurse regarding supplies, that seems to be across the board issue. I fight daily to get supplies. If I get supplies, it is about 25% of what I actually ordered. I also am having staffing issues. No one wants to work hard. And that seems to be a problem everywhere. And the sad thing is that it's an issue at our hospitals and at our private practices. You know, we can deal with staffing issues as frustrating as it may be at other businesses, and as detrimental as it may be to other businesses staying open their regular hours. I think I think we're more okay with that being an issue than in our hospitals, in our private practice, you know, where we assume these things are there ready for us if anything should happen. You know, and what we are learning is that we have overworked nurses. We have situations where some nurses might not be able to get their supplies, where you might be one of their 8 patients when it's usually 1 to 3 or 1 to 4, that your nurse might have to even leave the floor to take out the trash, that your nurse might have to leave the floor to go clean up food trays. I mean, again, this has been shining a light for the last 3 hours on the show. And I thank all of the healthcare professionals who have called in and really opened the eyes of the listeners to what is going on. And the phone line is open for you to do so at 803-0930. Also, the Volkswagen of Orchard Park text board is open at 803-0930. Let's go to Frank in Williamsville. Frank, thanks for hanging on, man.
Hey, Joe, congratulations to you and Katie. I wish you many years of happiness.
I appreciate that, Frank. Thank you.
I'm inclined to believe the nurses, Joe. I've had my personal experiences with the healthcare system in Western New York has not been great, to be honest, especially the hospitals is what I'm talking about. I had a couple examples. My wife had a condition where, I'll spare you the details, but she would become in extreme pain and so uncomfortable that she couldn't even stand or walk. So we were in and out of the hospital over the past couple of years, probably 13 times. And it wasn't unusual to wait, even with this type of condition, to wait 5-6 hours and basically just laying in a bed in the not even in the emergency room, just in kind of the hallway. And it was really kind of typical to wait 18-20 hours for maybe a day for a room. Mm. You never got a room. It was always kind of just, you know, you were in the ER sometimes for that long.
So, Frank, was she on a bed in the hallway?
Many times for hours, yes.
Oh, wow.
Someone would come and maybe check on her every couple hours just to make sure, you know, she didn't get any worse. But, yeah, she would actually be just laying in a bed in the hallway because they didn't have any room in the ER. Now, this is at a couple of the Kaleida facilities, but, you know, in particular, Millard Suburban.
Oh, man. So you're talking about a full day of, so you would get in there and they would admit her to a bed in the hallway, or would it get to the point where you said, we can't sit in this waiting room anymore. Do you have something where she can lay down?
No, it wasn't like this. She was so uncomfortable that I don't think they wanted her in the waiting room. So they would kind of take her vitals real quick and get her inside the doors, but never actually in the ER. We'd literally be sitting in the hallway.
Oh, man. And this wasn't a one-time experience. This is something that you experienced numerous times.
Probably 12 or 13 times.
Oh, wow.
So fortunately, she's better now. She's, you know, hopefully that's behind us. But it was a long couple years. It was really horrible.
I'm glad to hear that. But, Frank, let me ask you, when they would admit her to a bed in the hallway, would they at least keep you updated on what was going on, what the timetable looked like? I mean, or were you just left in the dark?
I wish I could say it was better than just being, you know, we'll get to you when we can. That was about it. I mean, you weren't in the waiting room proper, but you certainly weren't getting any care. It was really just, literally nothing other than you were laying in a bed, but you weren't really even in the ER or admitted to the hospital.
Frank, I'm glad she is better now, because that sounds like that just added to what was already an awful situation.
You couldn't imagine, you know, watching someone you love just kind of be that uncomfortable.
Wow. Well, Frank, like I said, I'm glad she's better now. Thank you so much for sharing your story.
I had one more, if that's okay.
No, of course it is, Frank. Go right ahead.
My sister has some heart troubles, and she kind of monitors her blood pressure. And 2 weeks ago, her numbers were really high. So she went into Millard Suburban, saw the waiting room was full, and they told her it's going to be a 10-hour wait.
Oh, wow.
To be seen. They got back in the car, went down to Buffalo General Hospital, and kind of experienced the same thing. Sat in the waiting room, and she said they did come out and check on her every hour or so, but literally spent the whole night in the waiting room. And when she finally did see a doctor, they said you should really just call your heart specialist and told her to go home. That was it. That was the whole experience.
All that, driving around, saying, hey, wait another hour, just to be told, yeah, you probably should just go to your heart specialist, which, you know, there's another phone call, there's another trip while you're thinking what's going on here, you know? I mean, just think about the stress going into this situation and having all that. Frank, thank you so much for sharing those stories.
Thank you.
That is Frank in Williamsville. I cannot imagine, you know, as he said, his wife was in what sounded to be immense pain. And this is not, it was, you know, 12 or 13 times. And every time the same situation where, hey, let's get you out of the waiting room, but we don't have a bed, we don't have the staff, so we're going to put you in the hallway. I mean, I can't imagine that, you know. And as Frank said, I can't imagine being the one that has to watch this going on and just being left in the dark. I mean, you're not even told when you're going to get an actual room, when you're going to get the services of an actual room. You're just laying on a bed in the hallway. That just seems like an awful situation. And for Frank's sake, I'm happy that his wife is better now, and they don't have to go back to those situations, because, again, this show, I've been using the word stress, and to add to these already stressful situations, the more stress of the unknown, right? You know, he mentioned going to Buffalo General and then being told, oh, just go see your heart specialist. Well, you're already stressed out because you're not feeling well. Something is wrong. And now you're told, oh, just go home and call your heart specialist. So that stress doesn't go away because you never really got a report of what's going on. You never were given that news of, here's what we did to have that relief that, you know, everything's better now. And, you know, like I said, the situations I've been in the emergency room, not serious at all. I mean, the one, you know, I was an idiot. I was in college and I got stepped on by a hockey skate while I was wearing flip-flops. I mean, let's be honest, Joe, not a smart thing to do. And yeah, I mean, it was frustrating the first few times not being able to feel my toes. But again, they told me that was a possibility. So I guess, again, I can't relate because I wasn't left out in the dark. I was told, yeah, that's a very good possibility that you won't get the feeling back in those toes. Okay. But I just can't imagine to have that and then not know what the next step is, to be sitting in the emergency room, not knowing what's your next step. What's my next step? What are they going to do? I'm just laying here. No one's told me anything. I don't know where I'm going. It's been 18 hours, and I'm exactly where I was when I walked in the door 18 hours ago. Again, I just can't, you know, we go to these hospitals thinking that they're going to take care of us, that we are going to get better in no time, right? You go to the emergency room because you want some kind of relief right away. This is something that couldn't wait until you could call your doctor tomorrow. You need relief now. You need attention now. And instead, you're just left in the dark, either in the waiting room or in the hallway. It seems like making what's already an awful situation that much worse. It was following this show Thursday evening. Definitely go check it out when you have a some free time on the Odyssey app and at odyssey.com. A very informative special that Odyssey puts together every year. And again, kind of like today's show, on this topic has been eye-opening. I think a lot of the accounts on that were very eye-opening. 803-0930, Michelle is in Tonawanda. Michelle, good afternoon.
Odyssey app and at Odyssey.
Ooh, who is that? I like the sound of that person's voice. Let's go to Michael in Buffalo. Hey, Michael.
Hi. I hope you, if you let me give you an honest telling for a minute, I'll give you my perspective as a manager down at Mercy. I'm not anti-union or pro-union. I'm just new to that facility, and I'll tell you what I've seen in the course of the last month. A lot of union employees have come to me in the last few days who said they didn't vote for a strike. They don't know why there's going to be a strike. It seems like there are a lot of employees who have been convinced that they're owed more money or that there's a staffing shortage when there really isn't. If you walk around the building and you have a look at what's going on, you can tell day to day how smoothly things are running. But I think what happens is if you get a story in the news that there's a healthcare crisis or a staffing shortage or people aren't being paid enough, you and I, Joe Schmo on the street, our gut feeling is to believe that that's what's happening. But there's no crisis at Mercy. There's no staffing shortage. There's no nurse shortage. It's just, in my opinion, it's just a matter of what the union wants you to think. And that's my two cents, and I hope that makes sense.
But, Michael, let me ask you about the calls we have gotten. Now, again, most of them not from Mercy Hospital, but about the staffing shortages at other hospitals around Western New York. You're saying nothing close to that's going on at Mercy Hospital?
Well, I'll tell you what my observation has been is that the staffing shortage is really just a shortage like you go to McDonald's. You can't find anybody that wants to work. It's the same thing at Mercy. It's not that they don't have the wherewithal and the will to hire more people. The hospital wants to. It's just a matter of, can you find people that want to come to work and do support services like housekeeping or transport or anything like that? You can't. And that's just a chronic problem. That's not the health system's fault. That's
right.
Just the way the country is running right now.
And I don't disagree with that, but there is a staffing shortage. Your point is it's not on the hospital. They're willing to make those hires, but it's the same as anywhere else you see right now in the country.
That's my view. And, you know, to be honest with you, we're talking about Catholic Health Systems and the Sisters of Mercy. And to be honest with you and very respectfully, the little old sisters and nuns who still oversee some of these facilities aren't looking to shortchange anybody. They're as in it as anybody else is. And this is just a matter of how it's framed for the news, to be honest with you. That's my opinion. And I know some people will take issue with that. But there isn't a crisis. This is just again, it's my opinion. This is just a way to frame a contract negotiation, and I think somebody played chicken, and it probably didn't work out in their favor this week, to be honest with you.
Well, and Michael, we are taking everyone's opinion here, and I'm glad you called in. Let me ask you, though, where do you think this is going to end at midnight? Do you think there will be a deal on the table before the strike happens?
Well, I'll tell you, my observations internally in the hospital tell me it's probably going to be a strike. There have been some concerns about some pre-strike activities that are already occurring and, you know, some shenanigans. So the hospital already thinks it's going to happen, I think. I can't speak for them, but my impression is that it's probably going to happen tomorrow morning.
But let me ask you this. So if the staffing shortage is because of the overall employee shortage here in the country, what does the union want as a response to the staffing shortage if it's really something that Mercy Hospital has been trying to address but can't because of what's going on? How does the union think that they're going to come up with a deal to cover that?
I don't think they do think they'll come up with a deal. I'll give you an example. If you're not in the union, the CWA local, at one of these hospitals, you're not allowed to do union work. So I supervise 100 people at one of those facilities, and if I want to step in and assist, I'm prevented by the contract to assist. There are plenty of people on site that are not union employees that can assist with everything the union has a grievance with. But the contract, you know, for their own reasons, prevents people from assisting, and that's what really creates – that's one of the circumstances that creates the shortage. It's not just that you can't find people in the market that want to apply for a job. It's just that the contract is so restrictive, it doesn't allow anybody who's not a rank-and-file union member to pick up and work. And that's a problem that probably doesn't get advertised too often.
Well, Michael, I'm glad you called in with a different perspective, and thank you so much for giving us your perspective of what is going on.